All right, here we go. All right, so to begin with, I wanted to talk about this way of looking at the child, the human being. We're all children, really. And that's what's called the threefold human being. And it's pretty simple, really. And Steiner makes it very complicated, but it isn't.
It's that complicated.
I mean, it is and it isn't. But anyway, it's head, heart, and hand. And it's three major systems of your body. The nerve sense system, the rhythmic system, which is your heart and your lungs, and your metabolic limb system, so your arms, your legs, and your digestive system. And physically, the human being develops from head down. When you look at a newborn, they can't hold their head up. Their movement is like this. And they start to, they're really not in their body at all, but they start to take hold of their body, and they take hold of their body from head down. And so they take hold of their body, first of all, in the nervous system. That happens in the first 7 years. But it's a downward moving process. So the first 2 1/3 years of a baby's life is mainly brain and nervous system development. And once they get that stabilized, then they move into this rhythmic development, which is more associated with feelings. And that's when they start, once they've come in that far, that's when they start playing imaginatively. Before then, they're making nerve sense connections, and they're naming the world, and they're identifying the world, and they're just becoming familiar with the world. Then they move into this middle section. And then, in the last 2 1/3 years of the first 7 years, they're in the metabolic and the limb system. By the time they're ready for school age, one of the ways that you can tell that they're ready for school is that their limbs stretch out. Suddenly their arms and legs get long around 6 years old, and they can reach over and touch their ear. If you look at your little babies there, it's kind of like this. And for a long time, it's just really kind of, you know, they can't reach that very far up their head, and then suddenly the limbs stretch, and they come over here. So that's the physical development taking place from the head down. And the soul development proceeds the other way. The first 7 years is the will phase. And so they're in constant movement. Constant movement. You look at a newborn, the reason they're so tired all, you know, when they sleep is because they moved. They never stop moving. Very tiring. And if you, I've told people when in my special ed training, we had to do the sequence that you do from newborn on. It is the hardest work. It's very, very tiring. So their mode of learning is the willing. It is doing. They always want to be doing something. They learn by doing. They don't learn by talking to them. They can, and you can progress a child quickly through the phases, and that's part of the modern way of thinking, that you try to grow them up really quickly. But Steiner's point of view was that if you allow them to stay comfortably in these 7-year phases, that they would be healthier at the end of life. Well, from 35 years on. Because what happens to you in your first 7 years establishes your health in a big way for the rest of your life. In other words, your life force is taking care of growing this body, of growing the organs, and if they're allowed to do that and the forces aren't used for intellectual thinking, for inappropriate activities, then those organs are as healthy as they can be. I mean, of course you have to feed them well and so on and so forth, but the way their consciousness is addressed has as much to do with their health as what they eat and what they breathe. And what they take in through their senses in a very big way helps to develop their organs. And Steiner called it earthly nutrition and cosmic nutrition. earthly nutrition being mainly what you take in through your mouth, and cosmic nutrition being everything else. And on, I think, November 17th, I decided I'm going to do an infant and baby night. Since we have so many newborns, I thought, wow, I'll do that. And I'll talk more about the senses, but really everything that you take in forms your organs. Your eyes were formed by the light. Bats can't see because they're in the dark. Our eyes were formed out of the light. The sense impressions formed the organ that perceives it. And so, depending on what we're taking in, is what helps to grow these organs in a healthy way. So you have this head and nervous system, which is the upper part where we're awake, and you have this willing system, the metabolic digestive system, that's asleep. So when you're awake, you're taking in all these sense impressions. And for a child, their nervous system from the beginning is very incomplete. They don't have the nerve pathways established from the tip of this little finger up to the place in your brain where it is perceived. And so they have to move. And that continual movement helps to establish these little pathways. And the diets that they have, especially fatty acids, but fats in general, help form these little fat sheaths around the nerves so that the impulses have a clear pathway to get up here and to be perceived. And so everything that they're taking in, everything that they're doing is helping or not helping to form these pathways. And some of you may have heard of sensory integration issues, which is pretty prevalent, probably 1 in 4 kids, 25%, if not more, depending on where you live, have sensory issues because their environments are basically too overstimulating. And they can't form these pathways in a way that they can organize themselves to make sense out of the sensory data that's coming in. Does that make sense? So, really, you know, all the movement, and movement in a bigger way too, and the way that you set up your day, the rhythms of your day, is another kind of movement. All that helps the child to start to organize themselves, basically. And so a big part of that organizing is the sleep life. Because when you go to sleep, you've received all this cosmic nutrition, which means it comes from the cosmos, it comes from the stars, it comes from the planets. Our whole material world is manifested out of the cosmos. And when you go to sleep, you go back to the spiritual aspect of this earth, of this material reality. And you go back to beings who help you to process it. And if the spiritual beings are given food that they can resonate with, is a way of putting it. For instance, if they receive a lot of pure and beautiful colors, then the spiritual beings can take that sense impression and help them digest it. A lot of sense impressions are created by what are called fallen beings. They're more materialistic. Their mission is to impede our evolution, to stop us from evolving to angel status. That's where we're headed if we can accomplish what we need to do in this physical body in developing our consciousness. So there are fallen beings. And those fallen beings manifest in a certain kind of sense impression, which is not helpful to you. And when you go into the spiritual world, those beings cannot help you with those impressions. It's like receiving a stone instead of a delicious piece of bread. It's kind of a metaphor for it. So what happens to the child in the day is really important for how they sleep. But not only that, how you set up your day is important for sleep. And I made a little chart. You've got it. On things that that work against sound sleep. So, you know, and so the other thing I wanted to say about this threefoldness, the head, the heart, and the hand, is that constitutionally, out of our karmic relationship with our and with the decisions we made with our higher being, we chose to be in bodies that give us one, that give us once a bit one-sided. Depending if we have done a lot of spiritual work, we tend to be more balanced in our past life if we have, and if not, then we come in more one-sided, either in the head, the heart, or the hands. And it's a very karmic thing, but basically your constitution, whether you're more in your nerves and senses, or whether you're more in your rhythmic system, or you're more in your metabolic and movement system. And if you had, and many, many children are choosing now to come in as nerve sense children. So they're very sensitive. They're very, very sensitive. And, you know, that the anthroposophical doctors and people who do the research says it's because of the nature of the sphere they're coming into that helps them or makes them so that they come in this way. But you, children are, they're a bit shocked, is how I would put it. And you can imagine if you're coming into an environment where there's so much violence, so much pollution, so much on and on and on. You know all the ills of our time, that they're a little bit in shock, basically. And it's said that autism, the result is autism, that they're shocked, basically. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe what I'm coming into. Now, most of our children aren't that way. They've chosen the most delightful parents in the world and the most delightful place to live, but still, they're pretty sensitive. And because they're really young, they are sensitive. So you have to be careful what kinds of sensory impressions you expose them to. They usually don't do well in big crowds, loud music, you know, just too much. And they, Steiner likened them to a sponge that they just take it in. They have no filter, no way of shutting anything out. I can shut the noise of that refrigerator out and keep talking. There are many children that background noise is more important than what I'm saying. And because their sensory system and their nervous system isn't organizing, they'll sit in a classroom. And what gains their focus is the noises on the side, not the teacher speaking, for instance. So it leads to many learning challenges.
I found that true with sleep deprivation also.
Absolutely.
You know, if I'm trying to do multitasking, mm-hmm. I can only do something physical. I cannot absorb two mm-hmm. sounds mm-hmm. without getting
Yeah, because really in your sleep, that is part of the picture. In your sleep, the metabolic system builds up the nervous system. In order to be conscious beings, our body has to be dying every minute. Our nerves are always dying. And every night, they get built up again, and you're refreshed. And once again, you can face the world and take it all in if you're rested. But if you're not, it's very hard. So, you know, it's just this whole balance. That's what I was saying. It disrupts your hormonal system. It disrupts the whole metabolic system so that your nerves don't get coated again and you can't process well. You have, it's called, we call it soul indigestion. And that every night before you go to sleep, that's part of what your sleep routine and what your sleep routine you create for your child, or I call it ritual, is to help them start to digest what happened during the day. And if you have a child who is a nerve sense person, then they have to digest a great part of it in order to go to sleep, because those impressions press too strongly in their consciousness. And so, So you go through this process of coming into the world, you're awake. On the one hand, we're pretty unconscious. And then you go into the spiritual world, and all these beings ray back to you what the deeper meaning, what the spiritual import of everything is. Every morning you wake up, and you forget it unless you have cultivate an ability to remember. That's what an initiate is someone who remembers their sleep life, who remembers where they were and what beings they worked with and what those beings were teaching them. And for you yourself, along with digesting your day, a practice that's very helpful to you, therefore to your children, is to try to plan your next day, to visualize your next day when you go to sleep. Because then that visualization, those thoughts, go into the sleep life and the angels help you with it and they help you refine it. And they actually help you plan the next day. They do that anyway, whether you're conscious of it or not. They help you to know what you will encounter the next day. But if you start doing this planning process, it helps you to become more conscious, and it allows you to be more intuitive in your relationships and to respond more healthily, because you're building up that relationship with the spiritual beings to help you in those relationships. So, and then you have the children who are heart rhythmic people. And they tend to be very good sleepers, but don't take them off their schedule. They just won't go off it. It's time for sleep, they're sleeping. Time for wake, they're waking. You can do whatever you want. That's just the way they are. And they are the more compassionate children. They're pretty interrelational children. The nerve sense children are often very bright, very aware. They see things. They report things. They think. They're very, they just know things. You're not sure how they know, but they know things. And the heart rhythmic person has more of a wisdom about them. And then you have the metabolic digestive person. They're the one who learns by doing. No point in instructing. Just do it and let them do it with you. And they really can learn in no other way than doing. And so they are challenged in a school setting, many school settings, because they're expected to sit and listen. Well, they don't learn by listening. They learn by doing. They're called kinesthetic children. And many boys are that way. Not all, but many. And,
Why is it?
Partially because boys inhabit their bodies more deeply. They come into their muscles and their bones.
More testosterone,
more
muscular.
Yeah. Their being penetrates their bones and their muscles more deeply. And in order to really learn that body, to come into this, it's a new home, really, is what you can think of it as, your body. They have to move a lot, and they have to bang up against things to find out, oh, body. Oh, yes, this is a new home. you know, Steiner said that it's not, of course there's always exceptions and generalizations are not right, but generally speaking, you come in, girl one life, boy next life, male, female. So you, you know, coming into this hard body is something you have to waken up to. And I haven't really read this. I've studied the brain a lot, and I've studied boys a lot, having to raise them, not having, choosing and loving every man. I am convinced that to make those neural connections, they have to move a lot. And those neural connections are completed at a later time in life. And they tend to make them more mathematical, more logical. And I think mathematics and logic actually has to do a lot with movement. Mm-hmm. So, and the sciences and all that. So, and they have to investigate material reality in a different way. Mm-hmm. They're just
banging into things.
Banging into things and exploring and outpouring and putting things in the plugs and, you know, the alchemist and the, you know how they are. I mean, they're little screwdrivers and putting them into places they shouldn't be and so on and so forth. It's how does the world work? Girls don't care how the world works. It's how do people work. So the girls in class organize everybody. All right, your shoes are there. You. Everybody's like, okay. Very cute. Yeah. So every, you know, they both have their gifts. But education is really set up for the verbal linguistic learners. And, you know, I think more and more children are not verbal linguistic. Therefore, they're not thriving in the educational system. But it's hard to know how to teach not verbal linguistic. You can't do it in large groups so well. The boys need more apprenticeship type programs and, you know, out on the farm and in the forest and in the mines and whatever, learning by doing. And that's not an easy educational system to set up. So, let's see what else I wanted to say. Children really, for the most part, don't know how to sleep when they get here into their little bodies, because in the spirit world, you don't sleep. There's no turning it off. It's always. So they have to learn how it is to be in a physical body again, and how to shut it down and go into this greater consciousness. And so what you're doing with them in their very first years really has a big part to how to sleep. Sleep is so critical for learning. I'll be giving you articles over time, but it is essential for the development of memory. And you can tell pretty easily in a class how a child is, whether they're sleeping well or not. It's besides the fact that they're crabby, they don't have good memories. They just can't remember things because you have to fully have digested it, and that's what you're doing in your sleep, to remember it. And, you know, just a lot of other things, the development of the hormones and their rhythm and their regularity and how the organs function. There'll be an article that talks about the circadian rhythm of the liver and how it needs its uptime and its downtime. But all the organs are that way, that they need that in order to thrive, really. And it just, yeah. And I know from having worked with children being challenged with sleeping, it's not easy to teach children who really, really can't sleep how to sleep. And so I investigated different things, like you can't have clocks in the room you sleep in. You can't have electrical devices. If you have a house where you can turn off the electricity, it's best, because there's an electrical field around you. And if you have a really sensitive nervous system, you just can't not perceive that. You can't shut it down. And, you know, gas heaters are the worst. The motors. Motors amp up your whole nervous system. Any kind of motor in the background, airplanes flying overhead, all kinds of things, and it's, you know, it's challenging. And then the ions in the air, you sleep better outside in fresh air near water because the ions are negative, which is a positive thing for us. So you can try to create the right ionization in your home. And where we live, it's particularly hard to sleep because the Rocky Mountains have a magnetic field that disturbs sleep. And the quality of the light is very awakening. Someone, I forget who was telling me in Vermont, how easy it was to sleep. You know, you're in these little hovels, surrounded and protected. We don't have that. We have the wind, which is really hard on sleep. Really, really hard on sleep. So, you know, you have to turn out the lights, the candles. I don't know if soy and the other natural candles do, but I know that the beeswax candles create ionization in the way that a waterfall does, and it takes pollutants out of the air. And then that's another factor, the allergies. Allergies can make it really hard for children to sleep because their whole body is in this kind of perception that's not, it doesn't feel a sense of well-being. And so part of what we're talking about is on this chart as well, the physical body, and then this etheric body, which is the life body, and the astral body. Now, their bodies haven't come into them the way that they will, but they are still there. And some children, by nature, very young, are very astral. They're very, very chattery, this kind of energy. That breaks down your life body. That breaks down your physical body. And all the setting up of the rhythms and the rituals and the repetition and the habit life, that builds up your life body. And so the life body helps you to perceive, does your body feel wellness? Does it feel health? And so if you're not eating good food, if you're eating foods that you're allergic to, your sense of well-being is not, you don't feel well, and it's harder to go to sleep. It actually takes energy to go to sleep. That's why when you get your second wind, you break down your life body enough that you can't get to sleep till the early morning hours, because by then your life body has built up enough to give you enough energy to go to sleep. So, allergies can really work against sleep, because the child just does not feel well-being if they have allergies. Their body is saying foreign substance, toxicity, and they don't feel wellness. Let's see what else. Yeah, and you know, I think really the part, I don't, you know, I was, when I had my first child, I was only 19, and so I was very open. And I looked at her. She was so beautiful. She was so gorgeous. And her little angel being said to me, I'm here to guide you and teach you. And I think that our children help us in the biggest way, not only to get to know them, but to know ourselves. And that, you know, is what Steiner teaches, is that really the mystery of life is, man, know thyself. Because the deepest mysteries of the world are in us. All of the world is in us. All of the cosmos is in us. All of the cosmos is in your child. And your child is such a mirror. They're such a mirror. You cannot escape that. You cannot close your eyes to it. They're in your face. And So, you know, trying to unravel this mystery of who they are, I think a big part of that is unraveling the mystery of who you are, first of all. And then, really, who are they? Because they are a different being. And, yeah, and then they just have these little, it's like an onion skin. They just keep growing these new layers. And they get more and more complicated. And you just knew them like a little onion, and then they're, who is this? This new little person. And so it really does depend on, I believe, on developing a relationship to the spirit beings that guide them and guide you. And seeking a knowledge of the higher worlds. And part of that has to do with the fact that we are in an age, it's called the development of the consciousness soul. It started in about 1500, and it's interesting, science and historians and archaeologists and so on and so forth, they don't factor in that our consciousness has not always been the way it is now. And it's ever evolving. Our children have been in the spiritual world more recently than we are. So they are our guides in the one sense. And in the story I told today, who was there? You two. They're both, it goes two ways. They teach you and you teach them. You're their guide for being in a physical body. You're a guide for, here's how the earth is since the last time you were there, you were here. And they're your guide for, this is what I learned most recently in the spiritual world. So they have capacities that you don't have, and you have this experience on the earth, plus you have this karmic relationship to them. This isn't the first time you've known one another, and sometimes those relationships are challenging, and sometimes they're not as challenging. But, yeah, so you have this development of the consciousness soul. And part of what is going on in this time, in the past, when we came to Earth, we had deep instincts. We knew what to do. We knew how to raise children. Now we have to study it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such an interesting thing. And we knew the spirit world. It was there. We experienced it. Now we've been cut off from it so that we can choose to seek it again out of freedom or choose not to. We don't have to. But basically, the spiritual beings used to guide a mother and a father in everything they did with their child. They don't do that now. They've stepped back. They've said to humanity, your turn. You wanted to be in a physical body. You wanted to be a separate being. You wanted to experience consciousness. Before, we were very unconscious. It was just an instinct of wisdom. You want to be conscious? Here you go. We'll give the baby to you. You get to decide how to raise it and what to do for it and so on and so forth. You, in fact, are intimately involved in forming their organs now, where the angel beings used to do that. They used to guide you. Here's what you feed them. Here's what, you know, you do the whole way. And so, and I bring this up because all of this comes to you in your sleep. And all of it is awakened in your sleep. All of this conscious relationship to the higher beings. And also because I've been doing the study called Nature Beings and What They Tell Us, and this rampant chaos in the world, it's us. We're now creating our world. We are now in charge in every sense of the word. We get to tell the nature beings. The higher beings will come and intervene on our behalf if we ask for them to do it. But otherwise, they stand back and say, it's like being a teenager, really. Remember that? Your parents had to say, you know, okay, I raised you. off you go. You get to do it your way. And that's, you know, and that's basically what we are. And it may be not even quite teenagers. It may be more, you know, not an 18, 21-year-old. We may be more like 13-year-olds in the world. And so I think sleep is essential for us to really come to terms with what we're doing with the world and what kind of world we're creating for our children and to help them cope with it. You know, last week, I don't think you'll hear this, my little 16-year-old had a little breakdown. So, I mean, he said everything you would think. How am I supposed to deal with a world that is in constant war, that has gangs, that he listed every, he had a litany of, you know, I'm like, God. That's what they get to face. So, you know, most of the world thinks that you're going to make kids strong by exposing them. Push them out there. Teach them fast. Do this. It doesn't. It breaks them down. It doesn't give them any strength at all. And it doesn't give them any belief in goodness. It doesn't give them any belief in beauty and in truth. And that's what you have to have is your core beliefs, which you gain out of this relationship in the sleep life, to how to deal with the world that we, that is just kind of a mess. So, yeah. But, you know, the higher beings believe in us. They wouldn't have stepped back if they didn't think we couldn't do it. And they are there to help you. The more you gain an awareness of it, the more you know that you can't fail, that you aren't in any real danger. They're there with you the whole way. That and really their picture is that we will become conscious that we create our realities, that we create this world we live in. We create it. And the way that we relate to one another, and the way that we relate to the earth. The earth is a living being. Trees are living beings. They all are spiritual beings. And once we begin to learn that and understand the spiritual laws involved in all of that, then our world will be a much more beautiful place. It will be a world of respect and of compassion, of kindness. And that, I think, is our best hope, really, that's the world we want to see. So, now, practical things about sleep. Aromatherapy. I always found it really helpful. Lavender. We use it here a lot. And that the more lavender that I taught you, or told you about, it's above you, Francesca, up on the top. What happened to you up there? Look. This to the left, yeah. And just pass it around. Go ahead and use it. Yeah, and the beautiful music, singing to them, and having time, you know, habitual times in your evenings that are quiet, just reflective times.
Recently I went to see Dr. Debbie Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
She's a pediatrician, MD, but she's also big into aromatherapy, and she also recommended for Raven, like, to get them to sleep some of the citruses.
Yeah, the orange, sweet orange. Sweet orange is calming, but it's uplifting also. And rose is another one. And they each, you know, you have to figure out which one works. But rose, I mean, just smell rose.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. I mean, rose embodies the heart. So yeah. Yep, that's another one. But I think those are really the basic ones. And they're very effective in helping them.
So you put this on them when they take a rest?
Mm-hmm.
I always smell it.
Yeah.
Who does that?
Yeah.
On you.
No.
Yeah. Right here? Their heart and their bellies.
Okay. And you play the harp for them as well?
What's that?
And you play the harp for them as well?
Yeah. Can I come here?
Do they come over? The older kids actually sleep back?
No. It's a very short rest time, but I basically, after lunch, I want them to pull themselves together so they can go home in a good way and not lose it. So we lie down and we just rest. It's a breathing out. That's the other thing about your day, setting it up so it's out and in. Out breath and in breath. So this is an in breath. So that then when they leave, they can go out again. And it's a time for them to process the morning a little bit, just to, you know, not be, have more sense impressions stamped in on them. And then I tell them a story. Yeah. And you want to do what we're doing for the story? Okay. Everybody up.
They're loving it. They're so good at it, too. It's a little story, just a very simple story of the bear and how he goes visiting everyone before he goes to hibernate for the winter. And so that for every animal he visits, when he comes on, he goes, rumble, thumble, heavy are his feet on the ground. You can imagine how they love it. Just go on and on. Yeah. And then we sit down and we have our babies. The babies are up there. And then the babies do songs and verses, too. And they love it. Can the baby sing this? Can the baby? And then we sing our lullabies and put our babies to bed. And we're
do
ready
they each
to go.
Have their own baby?
Mm-hmm.
Like their...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And their pillow. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so I think we're done.
I have a question. I just thought about meditation. I just wondered about...
I can't turn it to turn off. How do I do it?
How does...
For them, meditation?
Well, yeah, I mean, does it... having, you know, only looked into it myself, it was never a part of the curriculum, or there was never an appropriate time. It was like 12th grade, you took meditation class or something.
Right. So